time, they could have easily, as many have pointed out, pushed and made a ceasefire happen. That has not occurred. And now we have Trump coming in 3 weeks. He said if the hostages are not released by Inauguration Day, January 20th, all hell is going to break out. What do you imagine might happen then?
Oh, I mean, it needs to stop is the number one point. But there is absolutely no dignity left. And that's what I mean when I say humanity has ended. Froze is talking about malnourishment. Absolutely. Every single child has some sort of hypopigmentation. And, you and I both know as physicians, that's the number one sign of acute malnourishment. Children are displaying these signs all the time. And then when we talk about dignity, imagine, this population was not poor to begin with. The majority of people were well-to-do. They had professions like you and I do. They had education, 98% literacy rate there. Overnight, their lives were changed. Imagine living in a tent that's made out of scraps in cold weather with about 20 other people. On so many levels, that's a violation of a person's dignity and basic human needs. And I spoke to so many people, so many women especially, that commented on, there's no menstrual pads.
I'm so sorry, Dr. Mimi Sayed. We're going to have to end it there. American emergency medicine physician who just left Gaza, and Dr. Feroz Sidwa, trauma surgeon who volunteered in Gaza. I'm Nermeen Sheikh. Thank you so much for joining us.
You are tuned to KBOO, Portland.
You're listening to KBOO's Catalog of Connections year-end campaign, where we bring you a range of community-oriented programming built by community members like you. Help KBOO reach our $75,000 goal by December 31st. When you donate today, your contribution will be matched dollar for dollar up to $20,000. Just go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to the number 44321 to contribute today.
Dr. Zom's Stereo Obscura. Offbeat sounds for talented listeners. Broadcasts every other Wednesday at 10 p.m.
There was heaven and there was earth.
Después de esta pieza, vamos a escuchar una comunicación simpática y cruel con alguien.
That's Dr. Zom's Stereo Obscura. Every other Wednesday from 10 to midnight, here on your community radio station, KBOO Portland.
This is KBOO Portland. It's just after 8 a.m. on Tuesday morning. It's time for Too Much Information with your two hosts, Tracy Simmons and Abe Proctor. Stay tuned.
Good morning. Happy New Year's Eve. And it is the last Tuesday of 2024, and you are listening to Too Much Information with Abe and Tracy. Abe slept in a little bit, so we're going to let him wake up a little bit, but it is because it is New Year's Eve. And
wait, come on.
We've done this before. But it's an invitation. What do you want to get out of 2025? What are you leaving behind in 2024? Do you have a resolution? Do you believe in resolutions? Do you have things that you are manifesting for yourself for this next year? And of course, there's always an opportunity to talk about how are you going to approach this kind of second time around with the former guy as president. I'm already thinking about these things in my own head. I'm sure Abe has some thoughts about, you know, how are we going to either participate in the politics of, you know, the world with this crazy person in charge. How are we going to take care of ourselves and others? All of that is on the table. So please, if you would like to share what you're thinking, how you are moving forward into 2025, please give us a call. The number to call is 503-231-8187. We'd love to hear from you about kind of, you know, what are you feeling? What is your motivation for 2025? What are you bringing with you and what are you leaving behind? So I'm happy to start by saying the one thing I really want to not leave behind, but what I really want to move into 2025 with is this sense of, one, not consuming too much, especially cable news. But I feel like in the first go-round of a Trump presidency, I was so tuned in. And it was so stressful because, of course, the man is a maniac. There was, you know, news coming out. It was like drinking water from a fire hose. Every day was something. It was something. And I mean, I will still be tuned in, but the level of tuned in, I get to manage. And I tell this to folks all the time, especially folks who have anxiety, folks who really get worked up about things outside of their control. You don't have control over everything. You do have control over how much you consume. So that's just one of the things that I'm really being more conscious of. In this next go round, I have a lot more control over and ability to impact the things that are kind of more local, immediate, and personal to me. And so I'll be tuning more into that and putting a lot more of my energy there. So that's just one thing I've already been thinking about for my own mental health, my own, you know, mental capacity and ability to really focus on the things that matter most, you know. So definitely one thing. How about you, Abe? What are you thinking as far as how you want to move into 2025 and what's coming up for you?
I'm with you on what you said about thinking and acting and being present more locally. I think that those small scale networks, it's those close relationships, those are going to help sustain us, I think, in what is going to be a very the very trying year, the first of a series of very trying years. So I think I'm focused on that, and I think you're going to see that come out in the content of the show over the coming year. Another thing is that I need to shake off this sense of unreality. This has been, I think we can find pretty broad agreement on this sentiment. This has been a pretty lousy year. And ever since the election, I've been mired in this sense of surreality. Like, is this really happening? Are we really doing this again? And along with that, it's come this really deep sense of disappointment in so many of my fellow Americans. How could we have done this? How could we have brought ourselves once again to this path? But that's not a very helpful place to be. That doesn't help us resist on the one hand and look for opportunities you know, for daylight on the other. So I'm going to shake it off. I'm going to shake off this year and put it in the rearview mirror as much as possible. Live in the moment with my community and look for a way through. I kind of feel all we can do at this point.
Yeah. I mean, that sense of unreality, you know, I've never been one to kind of trade in conspiracy theories, but I saw with my own eyes, that didn't make any sense. It still doesn't make any sense. The election results for me, I'll speak for myself, right, where you have the whole ticket down ballot going blue and somehow, right? So I'm still sitting in that sense of unreality, but I have in the last few weeks said, you know, if Kamala Harris isn't going to fight for it, if Joe Biden's not going to do anything. I don't know what the hell I can do, right? So it's like, at some point, you just have to say, I'm moving forward, not necessarily accepting that this is, you know, actually the results, but they are the results that people have accepted. And so what else am I going to do but move forward? But move forward with a sense of, how do I protect myself? How do I protect my community and the people I care most about? How do I protect the people who are most vulnerable, who need actual protection, right? And how do I then also sit in the space of, you know, just that's what it is. It is what it is, moving forward. And I think there's a lot of people that are probably in that space too. It's just like, ugh. It feels numb a little bit. And I think with those election results came the finger pointing at, oh, well, you know, it's the white women, or, oh, it's the Latino voter, oh, it's the, and I think that whole exercise is an exercise in futility, of course. But also, if you can sit with that there was something kinky going on there, you can move away from the wanting to blame other folks for those results with wholeness, and also think about, how do we build coalitions of people, right? How do we continue to reach out and continue to form pockets and bands of resistance, and not in a 2016 resist kind of way, but in more of a, you know, a 2025 resist kind of way. How do we, you know, stand up for our community members, especially when there's this chatter about, you know, mass deportations? And we've already seen, you know, in the local community, a lot of harm inflicted upon houseless people, right? Like, what does it look like for us to stand up in a way that makes it clear what our own values are and how we're going to really move through it? And I think when you said move through it, it really reminded me of something I say all the time, that is, right, like, pain happens. Horrible things happen. You can't just sit there, so you just have to let it pass. You have to move through it. And I think this is where we find ourselves.
Yeah, I think that's, yeah, it's exactly right. That is where we find ourselves. And this is one of those situations where the only way out is through. The next 4 years are going to show us, it's going to show us things about ourselves and our character as a nation that are going to be ugly, that are going to be tragic. We are going to see the weight of this administration fall on people we know, on people in our communities. We are going to witness very closely I think the impact of the policies that Trump administration is going to roll out. And as I see this, I'm thinking most specifically about the wave of forced roundups and deportations that is coming. And we've talked a little bit about this on this program in the past, and about how we really, thankfully, don't have the infrastructure in place to execute this plan at the scale that Trump and his friends want to. But nevertheless, this is coming. This is going to impact people, you know, personally. It's going to impact the lives of people you know. If you don't know people, you know, firsthand, if there's only one degree of separation for you, it's certainly going to happen 2 or 3 degrees of separation down the line. We are going to feel this impact in our communities. And so when we talk about finding a way through, when we talk about finding a way to push back, one of the things that all of us are going to have to do is to be there for the people whose lives are impacted by these deportations. States like Oregon, I think, are going to continue to act as sanctuary locations for many people as this dragnet tightens around them. This is not going to be a guarantee of safety. There will absolutely be people who are rounded up and forcibly shipped out of Oregon and in the other sanctuary states as well. So what do the rest of us need to do? The rest of us need to work to prevent those things from happening, if at all possible, and wherever possible. And we also need to work to mitigate the impact upon the families of those deported, on the communities of those deported. This is going to be difficult. as we talk about these things happening, we're really sort of venturing into unknown waters. And I say that with the caveat of, you know, I know full well, Tracy knows full well, the weight of authority that has come down upon, particularly upon communities of color in this country over the course of its history. We know all the precedents that have already been set. But saying that, we are moving into a period of time for which there is largely not a precedent. I don't think we are going to see anything like this. We have never seen anything like this before. And so how we react, I think, is going to say a lot about whether this American experiment will be able to be salvaged to the extent possible. And that is going to depend upon the decisions that we make to protect those around us to the best of our ability. If I sound a little grim about this, it's because I am. Maybe more than any other aspect of the incoming Trump administration's policy, it's this mass deportations project that worries me the most, and I think will have the most devastating impact upon us collectively and in ways that that really haven't been foreseen yet, particularly by the architects of this policy. As absurd as it might sound, Tracy, I don't know that the people who want to mass deport the millions of people have completely thought through the consequences of your actions. I know that sounds so absurd, but again, this is where we find ourselves.
Yeah, they want to mass deport some people, you know, and that's where it really comes down to. Is this really about the immigration itself? No, it really is about cleansing the country of the people they don't want. And that's where it gets scary. That's the slippery slope for me. So I do want to make sure that we get some callers in here. I know we got Santiago on the line. Good morning, Santiago.
How are you?
I'm okay.
Good morning.
Yeah. So basically what I'm leaving in 2024 is any more vestige of hope that that the Democrats care anything about what's going on. You know, I think it's I think it's no surprise that that so many people voted down ballot blue, but you know, they voted Donald Trump red, and it's because they're looking for change makers, you know, and we have no change makers at all in our government. We have people who feign the idea of making change, but at the end of the day, like, you know, there's none to be found, and we gotta, you know, and my goal for 2025 is to continue agitating and growing the anger that allowed Donald Trump to be voted in the first place. You know what I'm saying? It's like people out here are angry. They're angry at the fact that we have such a non-responsive government, and that a lot of the time, you know, it's like because both sides are corporate controlled, and because, you know, they have a vested interest in making money, you know, they're going to play like they're going to do something. But at the end of the day, none of them are really trying to make anything happen. You know, I mean, I'm just we just saw AOC getting shafted for some 70-year-old centrist who has esophageal cancer. You know what I'm saying? And Nancy Pelosi pulled the strings on that. You know, I mean, you know, and AOC isn't my favorite by any means, but if there was somebody in Congress who has anything like the values that I hold, the fact that they're letting somebody who they created a space for, Speaker Emeritus, to be pulling the strings behind the scenes and basically neutering Hakeem Jeffries for as much of a liberal as he is, you know, infantilizing a black man, you know, who's supposed to have power, so, you know, to prevent any real change from happening. You know, the world is on fire, and the people who are supposed to be running the fire department are hiding all the fire extinguishers. So, I mean, I'm just saying, like, you know, I'm following through on the thing that I should have done last year because I made a bunch of excuses for not doing it. And this year is going to be, you know, I'm picking up my liberation theology books that I had put down, And I'm getting to the place, you know, Abe said that we have no precedent for where we've been. White liberals have no precedent for where we've been. But we have a whole history of where we've been. It's just the people who speak from a place of privilege have never seen it, or if it's been near them, they close their eyes to it. You know, it's time for all of us who consider ourselves to be change makers to start opening the eyes to everyone and making things as uncomfortable and as hostile as possible for the sake of creating a sense of justice.
Thank you very much for the call. Paul, I can't, for once I find myself in complete agreement with Santiago. I shouldn't say for once, it's happened before.
Yeah. I mean, I feel it. And yeah, that whole thing with AOC, and it just kind of, you know, illuminated for me this gerontocracy, this, you know, very old people, very, you know, kind of washed up people. I'm sorry, I don't want to be ageist, but I'm just being really honest here, that their policies, their practices have not got us what we need to have as far as moving forward a human rights coalition, moving forward human rights work. Have not got us elected, right? Have not got the people who will move us in that direction to the place where they need to be. And yet here you keep doing these crazy things. It feels like, and once again, I'm talking about, you know, the results of that election and how nobody in the Democratic Party is really standing up and saying, hey, no, we need to look at this, right? No, nobody. So I feel Santiago wholeheartedly, and I'm not at all surprised. That's what's also crazy. I don't feel surprised. I feel a little bit numb, but you know, as much as I wanted to avoid this reality that we're in, I kind of felt like it was always a possibility. I never felt like, oh my gosh, I can't believe it. No, I believe it, and here we are. I want to give time for Matthew on the line. Matthew, good morning.
Hello?
Yeah, good morning.
Good morning. I mainly just wanted to call in. I feel very lucky. I live in Vancouver, but I work in Portland. I've lived here a couple of years out of my life. It's always been home to me. And this year, I completely agree on most points with the previous caller. My family has been a lot of centrists. A lot of vaguely libertarians. I consider myself an anarchist. I love the city and I love my home, this place that I've adopted, but most any government beyond that has been really frustrating to even interact with in any capacity. That aside, I am using this year to leave a lot of, you know, personal stuff for myself behind, a lot of self-hate, a lot of victimization, letting myself believe that I don't have the power to make change. And following through on that, this year I'm doing a lot more volunteering. I'm going to be helping at various places around the city. Mostly I'm going to be volunteering with 4KBOO this year, which I'm very excited for.
Right on.
I'm hoping to help out at events or, you know, whatever you guys have. This last week was a little busy, so I didn't quite get to the previous orientation, but I'm excited to get out and do more for my city this next year and hopefully make some meaningful change. And the thing is, I know that a lot of people in Portland somewhat share my beliefs in change and opposition to the people that are going to be running our government for the next 4 years. But it's areas like Vancouver, a lot of areas of Vancouver, more rural areas outside of Portland. You know, you see people with, you know, big Trump flags and various far right like paraphernalia coming into the city or like all around the state, especially in northern Vancouver. And I can't understand them, right? Like their point of view just doesn't make any sense to me in terms of long-term health of the country, like people, like the caring about human lives and human dignity. And it's just, it's frustrating because I need to try and be able to understand these people and reach out to them in order to change minds, but it just seems impossible. So that's my point for this year, is improving my communication skills and doing the work, popping out and helping people around the city and finding causes to channel that frustration into instead of flopping my arms about in anger.
Yeah. I love it. Thank you so much.
Absolutely. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you. Thank you. Really appreciate the call. I think, Matthew, ironically, this year to come and the years to follow are going to give you lots of ammunition and many close at hand examples of ways in which to talk to the sorts of people you're talking about, and give you pivot points from which to try to change their point of view. And I say that because we're seeing transpire in real time now, the sort of exchanges of dialogue that we sort of only imagined being said by Bond villains in terms of what billionaires are saying about the government and what they plan to do with it. And this is allowing, I think, for liberals and progressives to point out to people, this is the worldview. This is what we've been trying to tell you for years and years and years has been going on, that the extent to which we have freedom and choice in this country is largely determined by the amount of freedom and choice that the very wealthy alone can allow us to have. So this is what I mean. We talked a few weeks ago about Elon Musk as the new head of the Department of Government Efficiency, which isn't even a department. We should not call it that anymore. We should have to come up with a snappy name for it, Tracy, so that we can give it the mockery that it really deserves. But we've heard this guy say things like, people need to get ready for some hardship. This is a guy saying this from atop a huge pile of money, the largest pile of money in the world. The guy sitting on top of it is looking at you and me and saying, we need to get ready for some hardship. And this was followed up recently by a post that Vivek Ramaswamy made, which I'm sure you've probably heard about at this point, in which he criticized American culture as not the sort of educational and social arrangement that brings about the best sorts of engineers. And this is why tech companies have to rely on engineers from abroad, places like India, like Pakistan, like East Asia, who arrive here and work on H1N1 visas. And this is astonishing. So here's a guy saying, I'm a tech guy. We need to keep hiring these people who come to us from afar, who are educated abroad and come here and are willing to work for far less money than native trained engineers. But at the same time, I'm the head of this organization, this office, that is going to drastically slash, if not even eliminate, the U.S. Department of Education. So which way are you going to have it, billionaires? Really, do you want to change American culture for the better so that we have more American-raised engineers? Or do you want to keep relying on this conveyor belt of cheap foreign workers to come in and do your high-tech work for you? And so these are things that are laid bare in real time for us to watch, the absurdity of this. So when you're talking about changing the minds of people and not worrying, how do I reach out to them? How do I change their opinion? Well, you just point to what our rulers are saying about how the rest of us ought to be ruled. And this is the language that you need to use to describe it. We are being ruled. We are being told that our educational culture is substandard, but we're being told that's too bad. We're going to slash investment in it anyway, and we are going to expand and continue to rely upon this supply of cheap foreign workers to do these jobs that Americans might otherwise do. This is the plan they have in store for us. They plan not only to cut the Department of Education, but parts of the federal government that help people every day, the parts of the federal government that are poised to implement the green infrastructure and non-green infrastructure investments that the Biden administration managed to pass during its 4 years in office. So we're really going to be able to point directly to real-time examples of this sort of thing happening. And as destructive as it's going to be to the fabric of our country and to the body politic in general, it is going to be, it's going to provide a pretty useful framework for which to talk to people about what's really going on. So, Matthew, I hear you about talking to people that you worry about reaching. The good news is you just be able to point to things that are happening all the time.
Yeah, I mean, just, you know, a couple of weeks back, we had that conversation about, you know, the medical industry and the insurance industry, medical insurance industry, and what a scam all of that is. And, you know, we had Luigi Mangione, you know, murdering a very top executive of one of those healthcare companies. And I felt like there was, you know, an opportunity there to build some solidarity across class, across race, across all different functions of division that have been sowed in this country for the people in power to maintain their power, right? Because, of course, as a collective, they can be more powerful when everyone else is fighting for the scraps. And I felt like we had a little bit of a moment, a little bit of a crack in the window when people were saying, you know, actually, I don't really feel that bad about this situation. And it kind of it faded into the background, and I think that is where we will have to be as people who bring truth forward, people who allow for a deeper level of examination of who do we want to be as a country, how do we want to show up as a whole collective of very different people to fight for those human rights, to move forward, you know, the notion that we should all be able to exist in this very big space with all of these resources, and we shouldn't have to feel like, oh, well, these people have to leave for me to be able to be successful, right? The whole idea of white supremacy is based on this idea that whiteness gives you protection from competition, right? And even the conversation you were just having about Vivek and him basically calling white workers lazy and not very smart, not very skilled, because that's basically what he said. And it made people really angry, right? How do we tap into that anger? And I think Santiago said it before, it feels like a righteous anger that can be tapped into to really illuminate for folks that you are being played, we are all being played, they are playing in our faces. Right now, Luigi Mangione, of course, for some, is seen as a hero. And you put that side by side with a Kyle Rittenhouse, who's been a hero for the right for showing up to, you know, a protest for human rights, for black lives, kills people at that protest and becomes a hero for them, right? How do we square that up? How do we illuminate that, you know, make it very clear what we're seeing in real time? And I think that's where I'm also going to. How do I consume less of that commercialized media that is corporatized, that, you know, all of the crazy behavior of this person continues to be sanitized and sane washed, and really tap into what feels like truth and reflect that back out to tap into something that feels like it could be worthy of, you know, bringing forward a coalition of people who really are turning away from, like, no, that really isn't what we thought it was. And we know this, Trump is a master manipulator. He's even shifted in his own kind of, you know, whole stump, what he was doing on the whole campaign about immigration, on this one thing about HB1 visas, because he's owned by Elon Musk, who said it, and now it must be, right? So I really want, especially for those people who have connections to people who are further into the right, further, you know, outside of my sphere of influence. I don't really know those people. But the people who do, you have really a responsibility for reaching out and saying, hey, what do you think about this? Not that you're going to tell people what they should think, but that you're going to be planting seeds. That's the only way we're going to get here, to this next part of this story. The only way we can get there together is if we actually do the seed planting and the questioning and building those coalitions of people who are like, no, actually, that's not even really true. That's not even the reality.
503-231-8187 is the number to call. Another thing that has me concerned heading into the new year, Tracy, is the fact that if he's confirmed by the Senate, and as I say that, I should issue this caveat as well. I fully expect all of Trump's cabinet nominees and nominees for other high-ranking positions to be confirmed by the Senate. I suspect that when push comes to shove, the Republicans who now have a slim majority there will fall into line and confirm the choices of the big guy in charge. So the one that really worries me is Kash Patel as director of the FBI. And we know that the appointment of Patel to this position and the resignation slash heavily coded firing of his predecessor, Christopher Wray, represents a pretty dramatic departure from the way the FBI director position was conceived. The FBI director has to face Senate confirmation. He or she stays in office for a full 10 years. This is supposed to insulate him or her from the tides of politics for a given presidential term. A 10-year term, of course, transcends a number of presidencies. So this gives the, at least nominally, the FBI director a level of independence from the White House that I think is a good idea if it doesn't always play out in practice. But this is the first time that maybe since J. Edgar Hoover that we've seen an FBI director come into office with an enemies list and the will to go after the people on that list and the backing at the very highest levels of the federal government for going after people on his enemies list. This, I suspect, is going to get pretty ugly pretty quickly, and I think it's another aspect that Matthew can use in his attempt to talk to the people that he was talking about in his phone call. And it's pushing back against the weaponized use of the law enforcement apparatus in this country that I think is one of the things that's going to test the extent of our ability to resist Donald Trump in the coming years. What do we do? What do we do when Kash Patel and the FBI comes after somebody on the enemies list? There have been a few commentators recently who have put forth some thinking on this subject. And one of those is to try to create essentially what are a couple standing piles of money, for lack of a better term, to fund legal defenses for people that Patel comes after, and by extension, whom Trump comes after. Enough resources to hire the best sorts of lawyers necessary to fight back on pushback on whatever charges, whatever transgressions happen to people who are on the enemies list. Because this is going to happen to people who simply dare to propose common sense regulation of industry, for example, in the halls of the executive branch. All sorts of people are going to need the support of the broad progressive legal community and the support of the broader progressive community in terms of the resources they're able to commit to this common defense fund. Let's call it that, a common legal defense fund for the targets of Kash Patel, for the people on his enemies list. This is sort of the community building that Tracy and I have been talking about on a more macro sort of level. But without the means to push back on this thing in an organized way, they're just going to steamroll us. So this is something we're going to be keeping our eye on as well. Look for the creation, and there are some signs that it's already beginning to happen in separate locations, but I would like to see a more concerted sort of effort. Look for the creation of a common legal defense fund as a way to push back, at least on a constitutional and legal front, at the depredations that are coming our way.
Absolutely. Looks like we got a caller. We got Doug on the line. Doug, good morning.
Good morning. I think your show is fantastic. I love it, and I would be sad to ever miss it. So, am I on?
Yeah. Thank you.
Oh, okay. Well, I want to, the thing I want to say is a lot of people are saying it, but in different ways. But I think what we need to do is stick together. This is a time where we've got to stick together and make sure that people are safe. And I think that the way we can do that is, I think in Oregon, we're very lucky. I think we finally have a good set of people kind of running our government here. And I think it's time for us to use what we've got here to make our state even greater. And I think that as there's a few states that I think are going to come through this okay, it's going to have to be the states that are sticking together and being and thinking more logically. And as we do that, I hope that we come through with even a better situation. I mean, I think we've got a chance here to really improve everything and be better, even though we're going to have, you know, a lot of things thrown at us that are going to be hard to deal with. I just think stick together and let's do the right thing, and let's see if at the end of this 4 years we come out ahead.
Solidarity is the answer. Absolutely. Thank you.
Well, Tracy, what else comes to your mind looking forward to the new year? Well, what are you most concerned about? We've heard you talk about steps to take for greater resiliency in our community. So what's got you concerned?
I mean, there's been people that have literally been attacked and made into demons, whether it's, you know, people based on, you know, what is their genitalia like? You know, what is their body like? what they believe, what they think. Like, there's been so many different groups of people attacked, right? I mean, I think I just worry about that. Like, at some point, do we recognize that the folks who have been made scapegoats, the folks who have been demonized in some way, have been done so for the purpose of us to all turn against each other, whether that's, you know, trans people, whether that's immigrants who aren't on an HB1 visa, whether that's, you know, poor people and people who are unsheltered in our communities, right? This is what worries me, this idea that there are some people in our society who are less deserving of human dignity, who are less deserving of resources and support. And for me, it's just going to be consistently pushing against that narrative, because if we're talking about, you know, a global movement for human rights, and we can't even do that here, how do we ever do anything for the people of Palestine? How do we ever do anything for the people of the Congo? How do we ever do anything at a global scale if in our own communities we have accepted that some people just aren't deserving? So, you know, I feel like for me, it will just be consistently bringing forward these conversations. It will be having conversations with people who might not be situated where I am exactly. It might be with people who have different ideas about how do we move that global campaign for human rights forward. And I think that's okay. What I probably will never have the capacity or ability to do is to have community with haters, the people who live in a space of hatred for other folks, because I don't know those people. And I continue to say that. That is the work of folks who have more proximity. And we can talk about how do we break through? How do we get to them? But if you have proximity to those people, those are people that I will never be able to impact, likely, but maybe you can. And so this is where I just, my brain keeps going there. And, you know, when I think about like New Year's resolutions, of course, you know, need to get in the gym, need to, you know, take care of my own physical body. Because of course I can't think that if we've got RFK, as the, which is this crazy, Director of Health and Human Services. Oh my goodness. Right, we might be looking at another pandemic. We might be looking at, you know, the zombie apocalypse upon us. I don't even know. I don't want to go into that, you know, mental space of doom thinking. But also thinking
worm,
about,
and you get a brain worm, and you get a brain worm.
Yes, I'm just saying, we have to be thinking about, you know, how do we prepare ourselves for what is potentially coming, but without a sense of anxiety, but more preparation. I want to prepare myself, the family that I, you know, have extended myself to, which includes people I'm actually related to and people who have no relation to me, except that we are related in spirit and love and community, right? Like, so that's an expansive definition of family. But preparing ourselves, you know, I was with a friend yesterday and, just having an interesting conversation about like, oh, what, I have a freezer full of meat. So guess what? If we ever get into a space where we're in need, like everyone should just come here, you know, that kind of thing. I'm like, oh, and I have water in my basement and I have toilet paper and paper towel. You know, like having those conversations is kind of crazy, but it's also about how do we check in for our people and set up a perimeter around the folks. And for me, that means not just the people who are my blood relatives, but the people who I care for, the people in my community. How do we do that collectively? So, yeah.
Yeah, that's a good, I think that's a good metaphor, setting up a perimeter around the folks who are most vulnerable in our extended communities. And what one of those groups of people about whom I'm the most concerned, frankly, are women. Now, we know that talk of a nationwide abortion ban is something that Trump shied away from in the latter part of the campaign, because I think he with his crude sense of political cunning, understood that that was going to be a damaging thing for him to embrace politically. But that said, we're looking at a Republican trifecta, the White House, both houses of Congress, and a very pliable an amenable Supreme Court. So I suspect that we are going to see a nationwide abortion ban passed. And I suspect we're probably going to see it in the first couple of years of Trump's next term. That is something that the religious right, the evangelical right, whose zeal has been a prime driver of the Republican Party's fortunes in recent decades, that is what they have always wanted. It was first the overturn of Roe versus Wade, which they managed to achieve, and secondly, it was the enacting of a nationwide abortion ban. I don't think they're going to be able to help themselves. And when that happens, we are absolutely going to have to extend the perimeter around folks who, around women who want to preserve their bodily autonomy and their reproductive freedom. I think places like Oregon will again be a place, will be places of sanctuary for women to come to get the health care that they need to govern their bodies the way that they see fit, to move through the world in a way that they see fit. So places like Oregon are going to have to be bastions for those women. What does that look like legally? I mean, what happens when, for example, there's a nationwide abortion ban passed and places like Oregon decide to keep the practice available and free and legal? What does that look like? I don't know. But frankly, simply acquiescing to a national ban on abortion is unthinkable and unacceptable, and I, for one, will have absolutely no part of it. So that is something that I believe is coming, and that's a perimeter, Tracy, to use your excellent metaphor, that we're going to have to draw.
Yeah, I mean, that's a big one, and I think, you know, once again, going back to you know, is this a place that we've never been before? No, we've been here before. We're in also a space where abortions can be completed with medicine. So it's about how do we start harvesting that medicine right now while it's still legal? How do we set up networks of protection around women and pregnant people so that we can, you know, have some of those resources and sharing of those resources now? Right. I think when I look at, you know, networks of abortion support from the 60s and before Roe, it was a different time medically. And so how do we lean into, we can actually do this in a safer way. You don't have to have a back alley abortion with a not licensed doctor. You can get the medicine and you can do that at home, right? How do we create safety in spaces that feel very unsafe? That we do have, you know, medical breakthroughs and knowledge that we might not have had back then that now will serve us differently and better.
That the perimeter, we're talking about drawing around women for the purposes of safeguarding reproductive freedom. I think we need to extend around everybody whose mode of living challenges traditional heteronormative assumptions. We know that Clarence Thomas, in his concurring opinion for the Dobbs case, signaled the court's intention to go after same-sex marriage.
Yeah.
We know this. We know modern conservatives' proclivity for hating trans people and making life as brutal as possible for trans people everywhere. So this perimeter that we're talking about drawing, and the more we use that metaphor, the more I like it. It's going to happen to anybody whose life takes them beyond the confines of traditional heteronormativity. We need to make ourselves as safe and warm and welcoming a community for folks of all stripes. Everybody who feels the persecution of this incoming administration, and they will be many, we have to be there for them. And I suspect that in Oregon, at least in Western Oregon, that's going to be a widely accepted ideal, and I suspect up and down the West Coast as well. So get ready for it. Get ready to draw that perimeter and welcome people within it.
Yeah. Oof. Even the thought of it. And yeah, Donald Trump has already said on Truth Social, he is declaring preeminently that marriage is one man and one woman. So buckle up, y'all. And for folks who are, you know, really in that mindset, and this is where I really want some folks to leave this behind. He's not going to do that. He's not able to do that. Just this idea that the things that Trump says will never come to pass because they are so ridiculous and vile. No, actually now, because, you know, he's got all of these different levels of power and people that have bought him and that he's bought, right? You know, things can happen. So we need to just move past that denialism. Let's leave that in 2024 and let's sit in reality of where we are in 2025 to say, no, actually, maybe he can do these things. What are we going to do preemptively? To guard against it, right? And that's kind of where I sit, where I want my energy to flow into 2025, but also in a way that says I'm going to prioritize my own mental and physical health. I'm going to prioritize the support that I'm providing for people in my locus of community. I'm going to really focus on what I have control over and kind of relinquish the things I don't have control over. But I have a control over a lot of things, right? So kind of leveling that up too. So
that's such an important point. We need to believe Donald Trump when he says things. What got us into this mess 8 years ago was not taking the guy seriously enough. And what held his first administration back was not so much their lack of ambition as their lack of competence.
Mm.
This time around, yeah, We did. We spent many minutes on this program talking about Project 2025 and how it represents a much more methodical, much more highly engineered approach to enacting the conservative agenda this time around than it did during the first iteration of the Trump presidency. So believe him when he says he's going to do these things. Believe the people in his cabinet when they say they're going to do the things that they say that they're going to do. It is going to happen. There is a playbook. It is called Project 2025. You can read it. And we need to be ready. We need to adopt a stance, a culture of readiness, and be ready to welcome everybody who falls under the hammer of this incoming administration. It's just something we're going to have to do, and nothing, we can assume that nothing is out of bounds. 503-231-8187. Let's go to John. Good morning.
Hello. I'm going to kind of go into the fantasy of this whole concept of trying to take care of each other and trying to find things to protect our, you know, our basic human rights. Years ago, there was a book that was published. It was called Ecotopia, and it was a fantasy thing about Oregon, Washington, and California, even though it didn't mention Southern California, were autonomous areas. And people lived the way that they wanted to be governed, and not by the people who are from Mississippi and Georgia and Iowa. And it was a kind of an interesting book. I mean, it was, of course, it was dated 1975, 74, something like that. But it was in that it put. It, of course, it was a political, you know, science fiction thing. But it was, you know, it came out about how. You know how the how Ecotopia developed, and it was like a total isolation of, you know, the principles of the West Coast or, you know, other people. I'm not bragging that we're all that in a bag of chips, but, you know, it was, you know, it had, you know, autonomous areas in an autonomous area where everybody, you know, was, you know, kind of serviced with their own, you know, special needs. And I know it will never happen and all that kind of stuff, but it seems as though I 4 years, a lot of damage can be done. But I would just, you know, just bring it out that there is a kind of a concept out there, you know, of, you know, some parts of the United States of being autonomous. And that's all I had to say.
Thank you.
Ecotopia. It's an interesting read. It's by Ernest Kallenbach. Like the caller said, much of it is dated. It's a really interesting in many of its concepts. Some stuff it absolutely gets wrong. Race relations, for example, it's pretty glaringly bad on that. But in terms of the creation of an autonomous nation here on the West Coast, it's a lot of fun. And there has been a movement towards that, towards creating the nation of Cascadia. You can read a lot about it on the internet with a quick Google search. I encourage you to do it. I don't know that we're looking at independence for the nation of Cascadia here in the next 4 years, but I suspect that that sense of regional identity, particularly as a place of refuge for oppressed peoples in other parts of the country, I think that collective identity is going to grow stronger and more defined over the next 4 years. What do you think, Tracy?
I really hope so. And I've thought about this for a while, like, you know, the relationships between the leaders of these places, right? Our governors, our attorneys general, our, you know, even political parties really banding together to put some kind of something in place that feels like protecting the people that we are in community with and that we share space with in our state. Of course, once again, not sure what that actually looks like in practice, but I hope they're having conversations. I hope that there is something happening maybe behind the scenes that we might not know about. It looks like Engineer Sonia says there was a vote scheduled in Congress for Monday on whether to create the state of Cascadia. Interesting. I wish that were true. I'm not sure. I haven't heard of that. But I think, right, as we move forward, this sense of solidarity, this sense of common momentum for human rights and to protect rights of people who have never felt protection really comes into view for all of us as some kind of mechanism of hope, and that on the other side we begin pointing out the places where righteous anger can be stirred and move people out of complacency towards passionate action for other humans.
Absolutely right. I can't improve upon that at all, except to suggest perhaps that righteous anger has to lead to a place of love. It has to point towards love. Otherwise, it's just a waste of energy. So remember, as we get angry, and we will, that there has to be love at the bottom of it all, and we have to be able to extend that love to everyone who needs to come here to be safe and human and whole. So stick with us over the next 4 years as we explore how to do this. I think that pretty much brings us to the end, Tracy.
Yeah. Here we are, 2025 coming in. You know, I want y'all to consider being members of KBOO, donating to KBOO, donating to other organizations that bring you the truth, donating to other organizations that support and protect our most vulnerable people. If you have time or money, all of it's valuable, all of it you can give, please do. Happy New Year. Thanks for tuning in.
You're listening to KBOO Portland.
Hello, I'm Eugene Rashad. Join me every Saturday from 2 p.m. to 5 p.m. for the best in jazz on your community radio station, KBOO 90.7 on your FM dial.